Each night, the young corporal returned to his room inside the abandoned church, which had once served as a military hospital. The night streamed in through the skylights, making its giant arched hall look like a catacomb. The church was inhabited, some said, by the souls of the soldiers who had died there, their bodies destroyed by yellow fever or by gunshot. "Everybody is frightened to enter there," the corporal wrote to his uncle. "I am not frightened at all, because I am the last to believe that departed souls will ever condescend to molest us." 15,000 kilometers away, Kailash Chandar Biswas received the letter in mid-1889 at his home in the small village of Koria in West Bengal. Traveling across three continents and two oceans, his nephew had joined Brazil's army as a soldier of fortune after working as an ocean liner steward and a circus lion trainer. The letters from Lieutenant Suresh Chandar Biswas began to be published in Kolkata's Amrit Bazar Patrika later that year. His incredible journey would fire the imagination of generations of Bengalis, to whom it served as proof they could also fight to free their nation from England's rule. Few in modern India have heard of that wandering soul, Lieutenant Biswas's name. But many continue to follow him into foreign battlefields. Late last month, as you must have read, Gujarat resident Hemil Mangukia was reported killed in Ukraine, serving with Russia's military as a logistical contract worker. Kashmir's Azad Yusuf is still there, together with perhaps a dozen or many dozens of other Indians recruited through labour contractors in Dubai. Even earlier, Indians were reported to have served with the Palestine Liberation Organization in Lebanon. They have died working in war zones like Iraq as well as Israel. Many gave their lives in the course of the long, hopeless war to liberate Afghanistan from Taliban jihadists. 3 years from now, thousands of Agniveers recruited by the armed forces for 4 years' service under the Agnipath scheme will begin seeking hard-to-find jobs. Likely, many will be hired by multinational private military contractors who look to recruit trained soldiers from across the world. Though contract soldiers do not enjoy the legal protections which international law gives to militaries, law scholar Lindsay Cameron estimates the industry generates over $100 billion each year. For decades now, successive governments have been squeamish at the prospect of Indian citizens serving foreign militaries. The time might be coming, though, to stop pretending the problem doesn't exist and provide a legal framework to protect contract soldiers who are recruited from our country. Excavating the historical Lieutenant Biswas has proved no small task. Leaving aside just one photograph the officer mailed home, he wrote in the letter that the uniform cost him $1,000 because it was made of fine cloth, feather, silk and gold lace. But there's very little archival material. The bulk of knowledge we have about his life derives from just two books which were written decades after his death. One in Bengali by Upendra Krishna Bandhopadhyay and another English account by Harchandar Dutt. And there's no book that has examined the Brazilian archive to see what might be there about him. There's no surviving documentation to bear out whether the racier elements of Dutt's biography are true or not. His Biswas drops a rabid dog with a double kick, slays a cobra with his knife, rescues a wasp-waisted Burmese woman from a fire, engages in a drunken threesome with two women in London, and resists seduction by a carpenter's wife. I have no way of knowing whether any of this is true or not. For the most part, though, the core of Biswas's story seems quite plausible. Following his less than enthusiastic embrace of school education, Dutt calls Biswas a great and bitter opponent of Saraswati, the goddess of learning. The young man eventually found work at Spencer's Hotel in Kolkata as a tout and a tour guide. Later, though, Biswas was overcome by an urge to seek his fortune abroad, just as many young men are today. He travelled to Rangoon, had no luck, and then made the long journey to London. In London, he found work as a circus troupe performer, as a gymnast and weightlifter. In 1881, London's New Era newspaper reported on a performance by the Great Continental Menagerie, where Biswas appeared as a lion tamer. I quote from the newspaper report, "This daring young Hindu master of the King of Beasts is loudly applauded for his display of temerity," the newspaper recorded. According to Dutt's account, Biswas fled with the circus to Mexico because of threats from the family of a German lover. From Mexico, he went to Brazil, joining the army at the suggestion of another woman who was to become his wife. The letters show he was promoted from ordinary soldier to Cabo Esquadra, or corporal, in 1887, and stationed at an outpost in Santa Cruz, where the then Emperor of Brazil had an estate. Later in 1894, Biswas was promoted to lieutenant after capturing a gun position held by naval mutineers during the Battle of Niterói. Niterói, by the way, is a city across the bay from Rio de Janeiro. The leading English language contemporary military history of the battle does not mention Biswas's role, but in his letters home, he said his bosses were very impressed and gave him a promotion. Biswas's letters were to make him something of a cult figure in late 19th century Bengal, but mercenaries were familiar figures in the region and beyond by that point. Very large numbers of Bengali mercenaries, historian G.J. Bryant has written, served in the East India Company as well as with French, Portuguese and various Indian rulers from the 18th century onwards. All these armies were similarly heavily dependent on mercenaries to fill the ranks of their infantry and provide specialist services to the cavalry and artillery. Remember, this was a time before nation-states and citizenship, so people mainly fought for money, not national pride. Even today, Indian nationals serve in various foreign armies. There are Indians in the famous French Foreign Legion, as well as in the United States military. Though unlike recruits into private corporations, these soldiers have the legal status of serving military personnel and all the protections that come with it. Large-scale recruitment into the British Indian Army during the First World War, historian Arvind Ganachari notes, was similarly motivated by the promise of various kinds of payoffs, not loyalty to the British Empire. George Morton Jack has noted that coercion was very liberally deployed by the British when families were not enthused by the idea of sacrificing their sons despite promises of land and money. The use of mercenaries remained widespread through the Cold War, scholar Akbar Ali Thobani records. They staged coups against hostile regimes and did various things that formal legal armies of nation-states could not. I quote, "A private British firm, Security Advisory Services, did most of the recruiting in Africa," Thobani wrote, and a spokesman admitted that recruitment was financed with United States money and that the group was dealing through a liaison officer in the United States Embassy in London. Alison Stanger and Mark Eric Williams note that large multinational mercenary organizations, among them groups like Wagner, Sandline, XE Services, Military Professional Resources, Dyke Advisory and Paramount, all these organizations allow governments to engage in military operations without directly committing their soldiers. One organization called Executive Outcomes, which operates mainly in Africa, protects oil facilities, mines from rebels and trained conventional militaries, earning an estimated $40 million a year at its peak. In 1994, as world powers dithered during the genocide in Rwanda, Executive Outcomes offered to end the killing for a mere $120 million. Firms providing mercenaries often had high-powered connections. Former United Kingdom Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher's son, Mark Thatcher, pleaded guilty in a South African court to planning and organizing a coup in Equatorial Guinea. The experience of being colonized with the aid of locally recruited mercenaries has made Indians deeply hostile to private military contractors. But across the world, the corporation's influence continues to grow. More and more countries are dependent on the services of various kinds of private military contractors. As John Hawkswood, adventurer, mercenary in the service of the great states of Florence, Milan, and Pope Innocent VI, walked in his estates in Montecchio, he encountered two Franciscan monks. "My lord, may God grant you peace," the monks intoned politely. The answer wasn't what they expected. "May God take away all the alms you have received," the mercenary said. The monks were affrighted and cried, "Lord, wherefore you say that?" the 14th century poet Franco Sacchetti recorded. "Do ye not know that I live by war," Hawkswood replied, "and that peace would ruin me?" Even though the idea of mercenary soldiering remains morally abhorrent to many of us, the reality is that many, many Indians have sought and are seeking service overseas in pursuit of fortune. For Agniveers who will not be fortunate enough to find employment in the police or the organized private sector, the rewards of employment with private military contractors will outweigh the risks. There's just no way of avoiding that. To create an appropriate legal framework will allow Indian companies to profit from this global business and to protect their employees. At least Indians won't be thrown to the wolves. This is something the government needs to debate and address in a world where the nature of war is changing. I'm Praveen Swamy, and I'm a contributing editor to The Print. Thank you so much for watching Security Code.